Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
When I consider the guest that we brought this week, Tim Swartz and I, Rick Hilberg, I think this must be the geezer hour.
That's right.
You said it.
I sure did. I sure said. I admit that I've been to the geezerhood now for quite a few years, and I'm proud of it. We all have to face up to it.
Let's go back through time.
Sure.
Okay, we're not going to use George's time machine. We're not going to use the Wave Rider from the now departed TV show, Legends of whatever. But we're going to instead do kind of a memory time machine. And it goes back to, about the early 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of us, real young people, we're reading this magazine called Flying Saucers, published by Ray Palmer, who had this notorious background as both a sci-fi and paranormal writer-editor, which we can get into another time. And then in Saucer Club News, they posted an announcement, some people who had local flying saucer clubs. And they got in touch with one another. And I met people like Alan Greenfield and some guy from the Cleveland area, name of Rick Hilberg.
Yeah.
Rick, what led you to that magazine and putting an announcement there?
It's a long... We have to get in that time machine and kick it back a couple of years back to the fall of 1958. I was in my last year of elementary school, just a little wee babe. I don't know what kind of class it was. It might have been a civics class. It might have been a science class. Who the hell knows after all these years? You know, this was 1 year after the large UFO flap of 1957. And UFOs were still in the headlines, kind of, or at least in the public consciousness, especially among adolescent boys who read science fiction and things like that. And, you know, just, whoa, flying saucers. Anyway, it was brought up in class, and some people started debating and talking and going back and forth. And the teacher realized, aha, I have a learning experience here. So what she did was she said, okay, well, we're not going to go into this today. Here's what I want to do. I want some of you to volunteer to take sides in this and to present your evidence. You know, you can cite cases, you can cite reasons why they're real or not real. You can take the pro and con. I was a disbeliever. So anyway, I took the contrary side. So us kids got together, you know, after school or whatever, and got together the material, and they made the presentation in class one day. It really, really went well. I mean, it was for being such young kids, it was really, really thoughtful. And I started to listen to some of the evidence that I was trying to debunk that the other side was presenting. In my kid brain, I couldn't find an answer to it. So I started to think, hey, maybe there's something behind this stuff. After the class, I talked to a couple of the kids who were for, you know, the reality of the UFOs, and started to talk to them. And what it all led to was on our Christmas break, in December of 1958, we held a little meeting, and it was in the basement of one of my school chums by the name of the late Steve Bogdan. He was a friend of mine back in those days. His mother made us a nice lunch and everything, and we brought our books and pamphlets and whatever we had, and somebody brought a copy of Flying Saucers magazine by Ray Palmer. And I said, oh, this is really interesting. Well, where did you get it? And the kid said, I got it up at Angie's Delicatessen, just right up on Lorraine Avenue, right down from the school we went to, McKinley School.
Angie's Delicatessen? Were they eating the magazine?
Oh, Gene, they had magazines, they had paperback books. This was the, every kid's dream. After school, you could go in there and get an ice cream cone or some candy or whatever or at the soda fountain and go over and buy comic books or look at magazines. And if you were lucky enough to have a dollar in your pocket, if, you know, my grandmother and grandfather were really, you know, feeling sorry for me or generous, I'd have a buck in my pocket, and I'd buy myself like four different magazines. Not to mention the comic books were only a dime back then, but, you know, I could buy four nice magazines, and one of them happened to be Flying Saucers. And that's where I got hooked. I read Ray Palmer's Flying Saucers on a regular basis after that, and eventually I subscribed, and I met up just through junior high school. I met up with some other guys who were interested in the subject, but by then I was a raving lunatic about it, and we sort of joined, it was formed a little club and got other people together, yada, 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 and, you know, started doing a little newsletter and a spirit duplicated that my dad bought for me.
Hold your horses, you know.
Yeah.
People these days don't know from spirit duplicators, mimeograph machines.
Yeah.
They don't know that. They think, well, I've got my little inkjet printer in the corner and I've got my laser printer. But then, no, you didn't have that kind of thing. So tell people, what was a spirit? It's not something, by the way, that appears at night and makes weird noises.
No, no, and it did not replicate those damn ghosts, you know. So I ain't afraid of no ghosts, but they didn't replicate them. Anyway, it was called by other names, a ditto machine. It was a smelly thing. You had an alcohol and some sort of drum and container, and you may have typed out a stencil on your typewriter that you really could not correct. You put it on this duplicator, and it fed alcohol out onto this little stencil, which you don't, none of the people know what that is. But anyway, it was, the letters came through in an aniline dye of some sort, purple. And, you would crank out your newsletters, and this was what every teacher in the world back in the 1950s either had a spirit duplicator, a ditto machine, they were also called ditto machines, had one of these things, or had access to one. And that's where you got your quizzes on. It was a little, it smelled of alcohol and something else, the paper did, when it was done. So that's what it was. It was even more primitive than a mimeograph machine.
By the way, this is not purple prose, ladies and gentlemen.
No.
It's just the color of the printouts. I remember this at the schools I went to. The mimeograph machine was maybe a little messier, but the stencils I used for mimeograph, within limits, you could take this liquid schmutz,
yes,
that's a technical term, and correct it, which you couldn't do with a spirit machine.
No, you could not. And I had a mimeograph machine. I eventually bought one. And as a matter of fact, I for a little job printing thing that I had going, I used to mimeograph some of Tim Beckley's stuff, some of his promotional material and things like that. I would mimeograph that for Tim before he got a machine of his own. So, but yes, you could. It was an inky, messy, gloppy machine. You got your hands all full of ink. Put, if you didn't put the stencil on just right, but you could correct it with a waxy substance, but it half the time it didn't work. It was, those were the primitive days. We should have been, you know, like a cuneiform tablet, and we should have been etching stuff in stone. I think we would have done better.
Tim, I'm waiting for you.
I'm just having a good time listening. You know, you're talking about the ditto machines. I mean, my middle school was still using the ditto machine for the school newsletter that came out every week. But yeah, I remember. And then, and you had to, seems to me that you had to put it in backwards in order for it to print out forwards.
Yes.
And if you wanted to do like any illustrations or anything like that, you had to draw them directly onto the stencil.
I did a little newsletter on my own once this little local Cleveland club broke up. It was called UFO. First it was called UFO Newsletter. Okay. And I did a few issues of that. And then I found out there was a fellow by Lee Munsick in New Jersey, I believe he was back in the time, and he had a little newsletter called UFO Newsletter. So I said, oh, I better not do this anymore. I better change the name. So I changed it to UFO Magazine.
Let's continue with my old friend Rick Hilberg, one of my oldest friends on the planet, Tim Swartz, a newer friend. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners, I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
No matter if supply lines are down, product deliveries are slow, and that most everything costs more these days, you still have neck and shoulder pain, right? Good news. Sunny Bay has new products that target neck and shoulder pain. Products that are in stock now, ready to ship anywhere now. Like our extra long neck heating pads. They provide soothing relief to painful sore necks and backs. You can heat them in a microwave oven, and they come in a variety of colors and patterns. And for stress relief, get our lavender scented hands-free neck wraps. Or maybe you need one of our smaller lower back wraps. Great for seniors. Again, there's no shipping delays from Sunny Bay. Find our new products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and sunny-bay.com. Just search for Sunny Bay neck wraps. All our products are great for men or women, are reusable, and easy to clean. Remember, just search for Sunny Bay neck wraps. Order now because stock is high and shipping is fast. From Sunny Bay.
I'm about to give you a life-changing URL that if you will simply visit it and give these tax consultants a call, it will change your life. Whether you're a blue-collar worker or whether you're a school teacher or whether you're a scientist or whether you're a millionaire, almost no one out there is taking advantage of legal, lawful tax loopholes. Go to gcntaxcut.com. It takes you right to American Tax Solutions, and they will give you an amazing preview of what they can do for you. gcntaxcut.com, gcntaxcut.com.
I'm Ben Utek. I played high school, college, and pro football, helping my team win the 2006 championship. It was an amazing day, but it can't compare to the joy I feel every day with my loving wife and three beautiful daughters. My football career ended after I suffered my fifth concussion. Did you know that over a million athletes suffer a concussion each year? That includes boys and girls, every age, every type and level of sport. It isn't always clear that a player has had a concussion, so parents, athletes, and coaches need to learn about concussion signs and symptoms. The American Academy of Neurology recommends athletes thought to have a concussion be immediately removed from play and not returned until assessed by a healthcare professional trained in concussion. This isn't just about sports. It's about your brain. When in doubt, sit it out. Learn more at aan.com/concussion. That's aan.com/concussion. A message from the American Academy of Neurology.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Rick Hilberg goes back through time telling us about his first Flying Saucer Club. So you changed the magazine's title after learning that Lee Munzik, a fellow from New Jersey, had a magazine with the same title as yours. You went for UFO Magazine, but that wasn't original either, was it?
Yes, it was original. I had the original UFO Magazine. Later on in the, what was it, the 1970s and 80s, well, maybe 80s, there was a, it was called California UFO. It was a newsstand sort of a magazine, slick and everything. Then they changed the title to UFO Magazine. It was kind of a sensational magazine. I published UFO Magazine from 1962, when I changed the name up until 1970, when, my good old friend Alan Maddock, who you knew well, he had started Flying Saucer Digest back in 1967. And in 1970, I was going through a divorce, a little down in the dumps and this and that, and having been transferred in my job out of town, the whole, you know, schmear. He offered, hey, you know, why don't you come in with me and we'll, you know, do it together. Well, I was weak enough, so I went in with Al, and so it went into you, it went into Flying Saucer Digest. But no, I had the original UFO Magazine, and I refer to it as such.
So when there was another UFO Magazine, what did you think about that?
Well, I there's not much I could think because I did not copyright the name or anything like that. But people, you know, I would talk about, what if I write an article or talk to somebody about UFO Magazine, they would say, oh, yeah, I get that on a newsstand or whatever. I would have to explain to them, no, that's not the same UFO Magazine. Mine was the original one. But of course, it's gone too now, so what does it matter?
Yeah, well, UFO Magazine's departure was rather unceremonious, if you get my drift.
Yes. Well, I was not a reader, and I was not a fan. That's beside the point. I really dislike sensationalism and phony stories and, you know, crap like that. And let's just say that I was not a regular reader.
There was also the UK version called UFO Magazine. And so that added another disruption to the mix. Because you had UFO Magazine, United States, your UFO Magazine, and then UFO Magazine, Great Britain.
Well, mine was long gone then, Tim. Mine was gone by 1970, so it was just between the, you know, the British one and the American one. So it didn't bother me back then. It didn't bother me.
Yeah, it's you know, where I grew up, it was a relatively small town, and I think I was the only person in that town interested in UFOs, and of course you couldn't find any UFO-related magazines. I mean, the closest that we had was Hook's Drugstore, where fortunately, though, you could buy, they had like a huge, huge shelf of paperback books. So all of my first books, UFO-related, John Keel, Brad Steiger, Jacques Vallée, all came from Hook's Drugstore. It wasn't until I got a book by John Keel, and he actually had listed in the back of that book a series of different UFO-related magazines that I even realized that there was such a thing. That's how far back my little town was, and you know, this would have been, you know, the early 1970s. So thanks to John Keel's book, I got a subscription to Fate magazine. That was the first one.
Wow.
And then that opened my eyes up to everything else.
Well, Fate certainly is an iconic publication. I mean, ever since 1948, and quite frankly, a lot of people back in the day used to get more of their information from Fate than they ever did from Flying Saucers. I mean, Fate had a much larger circulation than did Rapp and his Flying Saucers. But anyway, as Gene mentioned before, that's how we all met up, because I think we started to put in the club news section when I was still together in junior high with these other fellows that we eventually broke up. But anyway, I think we put our first, you know, ad in there, if we call it an ad or whatever, and got in touch with Gene, and got in touch with Tim Beckley, Alan Greenfield, Tom Burke, another guy who's long gone, Robert Miller down in Newark, Ohio, people all over the country. I even forget some of the names, but you know, that's where we hooked up. And is Gene, I don't know if you mentioned it or not, Gene, but there, back in the early 1960s, there was this huge teen UFO ufology movement, and so many of us were getting a David Halperin. You know, here's another example of a teen ufologist. And like Tim and Gene and myself, and we were quite active. And actually, we are rather proud of what some of us did, because eventually we were able to sort of legitimize the field a little bit, in that we were not contactee oriented or anything like that. And we eventually started what became the National UFO Convention. So I think we made some progress. But of course, back then everything was teen this or teen that. The teenagers were such a large, you know, marketing segment that all the advertisers on TV and then the magazines, and kids read magazines back then. There were teen magazines, you know. They're for teen boys. They had their own magazine. Teen girls had their own magazines, and both together had and it was a lucrative market for the advertisers, and everything was teen oriented. But that's some cultural thing that really doesn't bear upon the UFO subject too much. But it's just an interesting observation about the times.
Interesting you mentioned the people that we all met up with in those days. Of course, Tim Beckley, David Halperin, who still comes on the Paracast every so often. He's a retired religious scholar. And the most interesting show we did with David, I think it was the first or second one, where we had Eric Von Daniken on the show. Now, remember, Von Daniken was a hotel employee, self-taught when it comes to ancient astronaut lore. David Halperin is a religious scholar, and he dissected everything neatly, calmly. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get to that other part of it here, of course. We had something that was called then middle ufology. What the heck was that? We've only got a few seconds before we do our break. So before we define middle ufology and talk about our decision to establish a different kind of UFO convention, not like Giant Rock with all the wacky, crazy contactees and all that stuff. We're talking to Rick Hilberg, someone I've known for so many years, I can't count them. They do not have that many positions on the abacus, which is, of course, what we use in those days. Tim Swartz is our guest co-host once again this week. And by the way, speaking of geezers, Alan Greenfield will join us in July. Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Here's a question for you. Why is it that some people aren't as stressed out about the future as you'd think they'd be? Answer? They're probably among the millions of Americans who have prepared themselves with emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. If the worst ever happens, literally millions of American families are already protected from dealing with empty store shelves. Is yours? If not, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now and grab some emergency food kits, at least one for each member of your family. These kits give you a wide variety of delicious meals that average over 2,000 calories per day. Everything stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Order your kits now by going to MyPatriotSupply.com. Your order will ship fast and arrive discreetly in unmarked boxes. Listen, this is something you need to jump on now, before the next news headline stuns the world. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg. A third police officer has died after a shootout in eastern Kentucky. Floyd County Sheriff John Hunt says deputies were attempting to serve a warrant in the town of Allen when the shooting happened Thursday night. On Friday morning, authorities announced that two officers had died in the shooting and a third was in critical condition. A police spokesman then announcing the third officer died of his injuries Friday night. Four other officers were also injured. The suspect has been taken into custody. Millions of Americans are hitting the roads and airports this 4th of July weekend. AAA expecting nearly 48 million people to travel 50 miles or more over the holiday. That's up 4% from last year. If you're traveling by car, the latest AAA station survey showing the national average price for a gallon of regular gas, $4.82 a gallon. USA Radio News. One state is taking action after a recent Supreme Court ruling.
Disrespecting a Supreme Court of the United States decision, New York State lawmakers, at the instruction of temporary governor and lieutenant governor, Democrat Kathy Hochul on Friday, did it again. In defiance of the Second Amendment of the Constitution of the United States, Democrats passed gun legislation that would severely limit where law-abiding citizens can have possession of their weapon and require background checks to buy ammunition.
We are creating a definitive list of sensitive locations where individuals will not be able to carry firearms.
One such location is New York City's Times Square. Republican Assemblyman Andy Cadell said the legislation ignores the High Court's ruling and is more restrictive than the bill that was struck down by the Supreme Court this week. From the West Coast USA Radio News Bureau, I'm Lance Prime.
President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden spending their holiday weekend at Camp David. USA Radio News.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
This is me, the Merciless. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio, exactly according to my plan.
Sir Rick Hilberg, old friend, define middle ufology.
Well, back in the day, we didn't even know what it was. You know, here's my definition of middle ufology. I guess there are several definitions. It really, middle ufology was not named until the 1970s. So we're going back to the early 1960s. So it took 10 years or so for the term to gestate or whatever and come out, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, my definition of middle ufology is, as you mentioned before, that you had the Contact Key crowd, you know, that held the giant rock conventions, the Space Brothers, and meeting the space people here and there, and selling books, and they, you know, they were here to protect us from atomic bombs and all that other stuff, you know, the sweetness and light, the Space Brothers, and you had the people that us, the teen ufologists, that were kind of middle of the road, let's say it. We disdained the contactee movement. We were somewhat more liberal in our thought. We could entertain, for instance, we could entertain the thought of UFO landings. We could entertain the thought that actually UFO beings may occasionally get out of these things and walk around and do stuff, you know, as opposed to the stodgy groups like NICAP, APRO to some certain extent, and certainly the early MUFON organization. They were very, very conservative and straight-laced. They were trying to play at being scientific, just like the NICAP was trying to play at being the Air Force.
But we were in the middle, and we said, okay, well, we embrace a lot of different things. We're willing to listen to people. While we did not promote the contact deism, we did promote the idea that some people had observed UFO beings. We promoted the idea that there were actually very valid UFO landing cases, and that there are actually cases where some UFOnauts, the pilots of these things, were, you know, actually observed. That's my definition.
At some point in time, a group of you guys formed something called the Congress of Scientific Ufologists. Rather a pretentious name, but it was the first one. Soon it was replaced by a name that was more sensible. So explain how that came to be.
As a matter of fact, it came to be in a rather roundabout way. Back in the early 60s, Alan Greenfield and I became very good friends. And we would tape spond. People actually in those days would write letters back and forth on typewriters, you know, whatever those things were. But it was so much easier if you bought a tape recorder, which had a reel-to-reel tape, magnetic tape on it, that you could actually record and play back and, you know, play music, talk, whatever you wanted to do. So we would tape each other letters, like lasting an hour or so, and mail them off, and you would listen to it and answer it back on the same tape and mail it back. Somehow or other, in the summer of 1963, Alan was thinking of holding, or the idea of holding, some sort of serious UFO convention, again, not contactee oriented, with like-minded people someplace. And I was kind of thinking, you know, what can we do? What kind of meeting can we, how can we get people together, you know, and to band together to have a better voice, to share our information, et cetera, et cetera. And I was kind of thinking about it the same thing. So however, whoever was the first, it may have been Greenfield first, it may have been me first, I really don't know. I really don't care. But whatever it was, it turned into this idea for a serious convention. Well, where do we hold it? Well, at that particular time, besides doing my UFO magazine, I was also a member of a local UFO organization. And one of the members of that local UFO organization was Alan Manick. And Alan, in those days, was in his 30s, quite an energetic fellow. He was a cartographer, quite intelligent, well-read, et cetera, and he was a ufologist. And he became chairman of this organization. The group would, you know, get 50, 60 people. We met in a downtown Cleveland YMCA building. Talk about old school there. And hold our meetings and whatnot. And I was talking to Al about this. I was talking to this fellow named Greenfield. And, you know, we were thinking, Al said, that's a damn good idea. You know, okay, let's get something together. And between getting together with Al and Greenfield and myself, we came up with the idea to hold it in Cleveland. As far as the name was concerned, well, we just noodled around and we wanted to call it something respectable, as in hindsight, we realized it was terribly, terribly pretentious. So that's, we called it the Congress of Scientific Ufologists. And it was held in the in June of 1964. I think it was this past weekend. George Eberhardt, I think, reminded me that it was the anniversary this past weekend, Saturday and Sunday, whatever it was. And in the same central YMCA building where the local group had its meetings, except we did not meet in the little group room. We met in what was called Parlor C, which was a large auditorium-like section. They would set up, you know, chairs for us and a podium, et cetera, et cetera. And we had our first convention. May I also interject that quite a few of the luminaries came. I don't know if you were there the first year, Gene, or not, or in 64, but Jim Mosley came. I believe David Halpern came. Tim Beckley wasn't there, but there were a couple people from around the country, plus Greenfield. Dale Reddick was also involved. Greenfield. Ann Redding and I were in another organization together, a national organization that we were trying to form at the same time. It gets complicated. We have such convoluted stories and, you know, intertwined publications. Anyway, Dale Redding was involved with it, and we held our first meeting at that Central YMCA in June of 1964 and drew a decent crowd. And it went on from there. We every year since then, up until the 1990s of some, I believe, 1990s, there was a national UFO conference held somewhere in the country.
Where does Congress of Scientific Ufologists, as we all agree, a pretentious name, become National UFO Conference?
Gosh, I believe, Gene, it came around in the early 1970s. I think Jim Moseley was behind this, saying this name is, you know, we have to change this name. This makes us sound really wacky. So whoever came up with the name, it might have been Jim, might have been in conjunction with John Robinson. I don't know. But anyway, the name was changed to something more sedate, the National UFO Conference, and that's what happened.
Each year you had somebody sponsor the convention. I did it one year.
Yes.
And we had this hotel in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. We didn't have money to do a lot of advertising, and I think at the end of the day, our loss was $135, which isn't too bad. I mean,
no.
You can almost break even after all that work. It wasn't so bad. You can't expect to make money from these conventions. The people who do that are the ones who run Comic-Con that have 150,000 people or something. They make money. Boy, do they make money. Anyway, we'd have a new sponsor every year who would invest the time and the trouble to have it in the city in which they live. But eventually that thing kind of sort of died out, as everything did. Was it a matter of professional commitments or nobody any longer willing to invest in putting it on?
Well, here's the story as I see it, okay? The UFO field changed from a group of enthusiasts who would get together and hold the conventions and who actually did research and writing and whatnot on the subject and actually knew something. And when these conventions were held, we would speak to the audience for free.
We've got more with Rick and Gene and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Are you curious about what might be missing from your diet and supplement choices? Take a free health assessment to identify your possible nutrient deficiencies. As a certified holistic health coach, I will help you assess and prioritize a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's one. RAD. Consistent results when used for heart problems. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious that if he hadn't made it to the hospital in time, he would have died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives, he tried Extendivite. While taking Extendivite, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our fifth bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
Basically, in our previous section, we talk about the fact that the National UFO Conference is no more. This was a labor of love. People would speak for free or for a very small amount of money. I mean, sometimes people did pay people to come. I know Jim Moseley tried to run a big commercial UFO, National UFO Conference in 1967, and that just ended up being totally disorganized.
Yes, I was there, as were you. And Tim Beckley, as I recall, it was a totally, totally disorganized mess. But anyway, I think Jim was the first. When he held that big 1967 convention in New York City at the old Commodore Hotel, I don't even know if it exists anymore or not, but at the old Commodore Hotel, and he started to pay people. He was trying to bring in Ray Palmer. No, he was trying to bring in Ken Arnold. He was able to get Roy Thinnes from the then popular TV show The Invaders. He got Frank Strange's, Juan John Neville, and there were quite a few speakers, but Jim actually started the precedent in 67 by paying speakers. And thereafter, this is with the National UFO Conference, mind you, not the MUFON conventions or whatever, or other conventions. Eventually, as the years went by, more and more only for a fee. And, that's where the crunch came in. You were paying sometimes hundreds of dollars to bring in one speaker, and I mean, if you had a crowd of just several hundred people, it was awful tight because you had to have more than one speaker, and you had to pay a fee for the venue, and you had to buy publicity, and you know, this, that, and the other thing, rent equipment. So that's where it got out of hand. And I think, as you mentioned earlier, they died off simply because people were not willing to invest the time and the money in holding them anymore, and that's probably why it died out. Now, I mean, UFO most speakers, you can't get anyone at any of these conferences without, you know, paying a decent buck. Expenses, room, you name it, airfare. Some of these guys and gals are making that really swell. I guess it was, you know, born to, way too soon. If I was born later, maybe I could have gotten in on this cash cow. And when I used to do my lectures around the country for free. So, but anyway, that really, as you and I both mentioned, that I think that caused the demise of the group.
Of course, now we have people who earn their keep from lecturing, like Stanton Friedman, for example. And for a time, even Jim Moseley would do lectures to get extra money. Not that he needed the money, but he would do it anyway and keep out there. But he did it originally because he went to the same lecture representative as Major Donald Kehoe. And he said, you know what, I'll do the same venues, but I'll charge you less. So it was getting his revenge against Kehoe to do those lectures.
Yes.
I'm curious, though, your first UFO conference there, the YMCA, what did that consist of? Now, you know, I mean, those of us who have been to, you know, more recent conventions, I mean, you know, that, you know, there's all kinds of speakers, and then there's a room where you can buy merchandise and books and this, you know, things like that. You know, what did that first one consist of?
Well, it consisted of basically some of the people who were attending as delegates, let's call them, actually making the presentations. Jim Moseley made a presentation. Al Manick made a presentation. I made a presentation. I showed what was would have become eventually my standard lecture that I, you know, added to an attitude user, the illustrated history of UFOs. I did that. That's basically it. Plus, as far as the books and magazines, there were a few tables scattered around. Yeah, in another room, we had a media room, and there were tables up there, and people put some of their publications out for sale. Jim Moseley had Saucer News. I had some of my stuff. A couple other people had this and that, the other thing. But it was just all penny ante things. Nothing like today. Nothing like today. It was rather primitive.
Of course, conventions are big commercial affairs nowadays. Even MUFON, they try to make it rather profitable. But the problem with MUFON is some years they bring on the wackos, the things that we try to guard against with the Conference of Scientific Ufologists and the National UFO Conference. MUFON doesn't care quite as much.
No. No, they don't. As a matter, the whole field of ufology is illegitimate or legitimate as you may think it is, has changed radically since those days. I mean, the things that we were considered radical in our time for actually promoting and believing in UFO landings. And also the sightings of the ufonauts, the beings seen around these objects. We, you know, that was kind of unheard of, although Abro had been having occupant cases primarily from South America. But that's another story. Anyway, today anything goes. Back in the day, we admitted we did not know what UFOs are. We do not know. We are trying to find the answer. Help us find the answer. We need evidence. We need people to work together. We need to solve this mystery. Well, today, the mystery is solved without a goddamn piece of evidence. Forgive my French. But it is taken for granted that the UFOs are extraterrestrial spacecraft coming from different civilizations with different types of occupants, all working together somehow or other, abducting people and doing this and doing that. And these people are convinced that they know the answer. And some of the crowd that go there is every single light that they see in the sky becomes a UFO and becomes somehow or other significant. I stopped going to some of the MUFON conventions myself a long time ago. I just said, this is getting bizarre. I don't need this. I don't need this because where is the proof? There is no proof. And I could even go on further on this, that if you watch all these tabloid TV shows that are so very popular today on cable TV, you'll see one that was going around about a fellow whose name I'm not going to mention, who was allegedly working on an Air Force project, investigating the Tic Tacs and this, that, and the other thing, and he and his group, his cohorts or whatever that were doing the show, they decided to come up, what kind of evidence have we gathered? What do we know now? What have we found out about UFOs? Well, we found out A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And you know what? All right on down the line, we knew that in the goddamn 1950s. We knew that when we were teen ufologists in the 1960s. They forgot. Because the ufology of today does not have a proper understanding of its history. They do not know what happened in the past. They are not interested in the past. They have absolutely no stomach or reason to go into looking into historical cases. If they did, they may find out that they're just going around in a great big circle. They're doing exactly what we did. Not necessarily in the same way, but they're doing exactly what we did back in the day, and they're not getting one iota closer to an actual factual truth or answer, period.
Well, the entire UFO mystery nowadays, at least according to the Pentagon, consists of the Tic Tac UFOs going forward. Going backwards now. In fact, even people who actually say they might do older stuff become celebrities like Luis Elizondo. Now, Luis Elizondo, don't know the guy. Seen him on TV a couple of times. Seems like a decent gentleman. But he was put into this administrative position with the Pentagon UFO project, one of them, there have been several, and suddenly he's the world's greatest expert on UFOs. And you have to wonder here, wait a minute, what about all these people who've been spending decades learning this, and here's a brand new guy, a newcomer, writing a book, going to set the record straight? You know, I don't know. I don't know what he has to say anymore. No criticism intended. It's just I wonder. I don't wonder what Rick Hilberg has to say. You folks know. Tim Swartz, Gene Steinberg, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis.
Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Youngevity for over 17 years, since before it was Youngevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Youngevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never, not once, been late in 17 years. Youngevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Youngevity.